Hello, and welcome to the Service Contractor's Business Tape of the Month. This monthly cassette tape series represents yet another step in accomplishing Granting Associates' vision of helping the service contractor come to a place of maturity and profitability. Each month, a different national speaker from throughout the service and trades industry shares dozens of cost-reducing, profit-increasing ideas to help you become a more profitable company. This month's tape is by Mike Heidut. Mike has been a frequent speaker on this tape series and is currently president of Callahan Roach and Publications. He has over 29 years of experience in the HVAC industry. Before joining Callahan Roach in late 2000, he served as executive vice president of Excellence Alliance Incorporated. Mike has also directed the Marketing Systems Division and was VP of Training and Development for Callahan Roach and Associates, then the parent company of Callahan Roach Products and Publications. Mike also spent 8 years with Lennox as a corporate business consultant and director of business services. Needless to say, Mike has a lot of experience in the area of today's topic, which is how to increase productivity. Now let's sit back, relax, and see if we can glean some ideas of Mike's presentation.
Productivity. The word conjures up a staff of economists with horn-rimmed glasses sitting around conference room desks talking in terms of metrics and abstract business models and the implications of the impact of the latest FDA-approved drug on absenteeism in the workplace. If that is what you think when you think about productivity, well, that's about right. As a matter of fact, the study of productivity in our society and in the world receives extensive study and scrutiny. The financial implications are profound. When we go back in history and review what has made our citizens more productive and ultimately lead to a better standard of living for all of us, we've always connected productivity to significant events and technological improvements. Certainly, farmers became more productive when they transitioned from a plow horse to an internal combustion engine-powered tractor to disc the soil before planting seed. And how much more productive was that same farmer when he went from hand-picking to a combine to harvest his crops? Fast forward to today. What have computers done to improve the way you market, or the way you keep track of your employees, or the way you do your accounting, or the way you manage your jobs? We certainly did a fine job of all these things for the past 250 years. But how much faster and more accurately do we do these things now with computers? And how they improved our standard of living. The sheer number of consumer items available to us today because of the productivity of our economic system can be attributed to the automation of computers. One of my all-time favorite shows from the early days of TV, The Honeymooners, starring the late Jackie Gleason playing the role of Ralph Cramden, a big city bus driver in the 1950s who had big dreams but lived a truly hand-to-mouth existence. If you have seen this show that's still running on reruns, Ralph's life was very Spartan. No curtains on the windows, one small kitchen table, a small icebox, and not much else. Today's transit driver's existence is substantially better with a nice home, color television, and more than a periodic night out with the family for dinner. The point to the story is that our improved lifestyles can be attributed in large due to the increase in technology-induced productivity that we've experienced in the last 50 years. Just look at the wealth of shopping malls and the abundance of consumer items available to us compared to the dime stores of our parents' generation. In these instances, the country, and world for that matter, has experienced marked improvements in economic wealth and all the lifestyle enhancements that go along with them. Now stay with me. Really, this is not an economics lesson because I'm going to address what this means to the average small businessman and specifically to the heating and air conditioning contractor and plumber. If you're a small business owner in other home-related industries, this is for you as well. See, productivity can be the linchpin to wonderful things in your business. This is a discussion about productivity. Productivity where it counts, and that is in your business. Let's get going. What does productivity mean to you? To some, it means working the staff to get more work done. To another, it may mean making more money. To yet another, it may mean to do more with less. Well, the elements of productivity are embodied in all of these. In the McKinsey Quarterly, a publication of the McKinsey Global Institute, a company that studies things like productivity and other things of this nature, has found that three items contribute to a company's improved performance: minimizing waste, hiring the right people, and performance management, which reward people who attain better than standard performance. We in the service business can learn from McKinsey's observations as it pertains to assisting you as business owners and managers in your desire to make more profits by becoming more productive. Before we talk about these three variables to make your company more productive, I would like to mention another business strategy that does not necessarily improve productivity, but it's important to mention since it's a sound business practice, but one which often gets confused with our friend productivity. That is profitability. Or should I say, one of the key variables that causes increased profitability. That's price increases. See, the average business owner gauges their and their senior manager's performance based upon the latest income statement. So it stands to reason that the bigger the number on the bottom line, the more productive the collective efforts of the company may seem. Not true. I mention this because the average service business today charges way too little for their service. Service businesses, by definition, are labor-driven. Service businesses do sell parts and sometimes replacement installations, but with a few exceptions, all service revenue has labor attached to it. Not enough analysis is made with regard to the true cost of an hour of labor versus the charged labor amount. When I taught Callahan Roach financial classes a few years ago, and a true analysis of the cost of labor were uncovered, we discussed what it would take to put a tech on the street for 1 hour. "I can't get that kind of revenue in my market," was a common cry. "I have to charge what the market will bear." True enough, but how long can you sell hours of labor at less than cost? The average break-even per hour for the HVAC industry that I have found in my experience is about $60. Yet many AC companies are charging $50 or $55 per hour and wonder where have all the profits gone. Do they make it up on volume? Volume can more than recover some of the overheads, but increased business in the service business typically increases overhead. Many times the larger a company becomes actually reduces its profitability. Or even worse, monies are taken from other business elements to keep the business going. These would include your salary as company manager, training, proper tools and equipment, modern trucks, and communications tools, and on and on. You may stay in business, but never seem to have retained earnings from which to grow or reinvest in your business. Aha! Let's raise our rates. Good thinking. But if you raise your rates without having the quality products and services behind them, is going to result in a slow business death. Restaurants are famous for this. In your case, your customers, your employees, and maybe you yourself will give in to a sense of resignation about the viability of your contribution to the buying public. Let's face it, if your market does not see value in the service you provide for the dollar, your competitors will convince your customers that it's better to do business with them. So, in all this pricing discussion, where do we stand? Do we underprice and undermine our existence, or overprice and lose market share? The answer obviously lies somewhere in between, and at a pricing level that is fair to the marketplace and commensurate with what you offer your customers. Since I have found that most service companies charge too little in relation to their costs, raising prices is a good strategy for most. That's what our customer assurance pricing service has done for many companies over the past dozen or so years. We advise our customers to determine their true business costs and then to work to a reasonable gross margin figure, usually somewhere between 60 and 65%. For most, this will yield a net profit of somewhere between 10 and 15%. Okay, let's say you've raised your rates and you're realizing a decent margin. Your overheads are in line, but you now want to make some more profits to increase retained earnings and refine your organization's performance. Raise rates again? Hardly. I hope this discussion we just had discourages you from such a cavalier strategy. So what do we do now? Well, let's get back to our productivity discussion. Let's do some math. Oh my God, Hajduk is going from economics to math. What next? Psychometrics? I'll save you the pain. Let's call it more like arithmetic. If you have a piece of paper when you're listening to this tape, it might help you to jot the numbers down as we go. But even if you are not at a desk, you should be able to follow nevertheless. Okay, got your paper and pencil, but please, just listen along if you're in your car. Take a $2 million service company that does one half its work in service and service agreements, and the other half in replacements and construction-type jobs. This company's margins are 65% for the service and 42% for the installation department. These may vary slightly for your company or what you perceive as optimal for a home service business. But allow me to use these for example. Oh, by the way, if you don't know what your margins are for your sales department versus your service department, I suggest you immediately departmentalize. Tom Grandy has a program that can help you do that. If you already do, that's great. Back to our sample company. If our target net profit is 12%, then the net dollar profits are $240,000 in our $2 million company. At these margins, the overhead figures to be $830,000 or 41.5%. Nothing really unusual here. $2 million in sales split equally between sales and service. 65% margin in service and 42% in installation, netting out 12% bottom line before taxes. Okay, let's dig a little deeper. Let me first comment about a key term as it relates to productivity, that is, applied labor. The other side of the coin is, logically, unapplied labor. I hope each of you know these terms intimately and that you use these terms regularly in your business and that you try your best to get the applied labor figure larger. Simply put, the applied labor number is that percentage of your workforce's day that is paid for by the customer. Wow, that's a revelation. While this may seem like one of those blinding flashes of the obvious, it is one that is more overlooked than not. And when it is observed, the resulting inefficiencies of unapplied labor are usually relegated to there's nothing we can really do about it. It's the nature of our business. And I agree. Until we can figure out how to eliminate the traffic on the interstate, or Scotty can beam your technician over to your customer's house, then we will always have some inefficiencies or unapplied labor in the service business. If you were drawn to my gross margin numbers a few moments ago, and the percentages, if you believe what I just said about the inefficiencies of service work, then you will understand why a company must get over 60% margins in service, and installation margins in the 40s and maybe even into the 30s are acceptable. You may have heard me say this before, labor drives overhead, and service, because of the inefficiencies and extraordinary costs of service, the driving, the service meetings, the dispatch costs, the smaller ticket size, all force you to demand larger margins for that type of work. And how about the larger volume of gasoline you burn, the more wear on the company fleet, the dispatchers, the accountant's time to track more job tickets, and on and on. This addresses the first point of productivity, and that is to minimize waste. If you could reduce the number of times your truck moves around town, your gas expense goes down, your tire and oil costs are reduced, and the number of dispatch transmissions are fewer. Multiply this times the number of trucks you have, and you can figure the increased productivity in hard dollars for tending to waste. How to do this? You might suggest that you have customers all over town, and during the peak seasons you have to tend to your bread and butter accounts. True enough, but let's analyze your customer base and how your field staff and administrative support handles them. Are you just taking on every call-in customer just to stay busy? Is that call that you receive from a customer that is 45 miles away from your office the best customer to travel to? I talk to service company owners daily. When I ask them how large an area they market to, most tell me that they take care of their entire metropolitan area, and that's regardless of the size of the city. The temptation is there to just go where the calls come from without regard to the cost of getting the tech to the job, or the wear and the tear on your vehicles and people. Too much of this can be summed up in a word, inefficiency. Inefficiency is the other side of the productivity coin. You know the culprits. The yellow page salesman who convinces you to be in every book in the market, the radio ad salesman who shows you the latest ratings and the number of customers you can reach with your message, and even the manufacturers who are trying to build their market share by promoting all their dealerships with a market-wide strategy. Don't do it. By spreading yourself thin is adding costs, and these increased costs add to a lower productivity. And this is just one type of waste. I'll save the many other examples of waste in your type of company for another discussion. Things like rework of a job that is not done right, or the waste of time inside the administrative part of your business. See, the point is that there is a lot of waste in your business, and the first approach is to analyze what is truly going on in the business. For the purpose of my message, I'll limit my discussion to the waste as it pertains to lost opportunities in the field. A few quick tips to help you reduce waste in the field. Your goal should be fewer but larger service calls. Select your battlegrounds. Do not market to just anywhere in your city. Dispatch one service call at a time to optimize the logistics of your field staff. Install quality standards, since doing things right the first time is key to your success. And train your people more. The best companies I have visited have a 40-hour per year minimum training goal per employee. These are just a few. Can you add more? In a minute, I'm going to talk about hiring the right people. But once they're hired, they're like the truck that needs an oil change regularly. Maintain it, and you'll have a reliable asset. Don't do it, and the engine will seize up and stop. Training is the oil that will keep your business efficient. But you'll need to have the right people in the place to train. Even Tom Landry couldn't have coached the local junior high team to a Super Bowl victory. Hiring is a key to increased productivity. A few years ago, I was a marketing director for a well-known and quality air conditioning manufacturer. I had a team of professionals that worked with me that were great. They made my job easy and made me look good. I'd like to say that I was responsible for assembling this team single-handedly, but I can't take the credit. Being a major company, we had regular reviews and goal setting in the company. This made the cream rise to the top, so to speak. The individuals inside the company were identified as performers and were made available to me within their career path. These people do not magically appear at your doorstep. We attracted some of the others because we were constantly on the lookout for talent. My network of friends in the industry and the friends and associates of my other coworkers provided a continual stream of resumes for me to review, even if I didn't have an opening at the time. Of course, once I had collected a pool of resumes and a job opening developed, even then I had other help in identifying the people for my team. We used testing and an outside counseling firm to review the inner workings of the applicant. Did you know that most people who hire will give greater consideration to someone who they like rather than the ability to do the prescribed job tasks? It makes sense that a manager will put someone into a job if they like the person. The perception is that life will be easier for them. After all, what manager wants continual conflict and more hassles in their job? Things are inherently difficult already. But what good does it do to have friends working for you if they are not performers? Many managers make this mistake. I have, and perhaps you may have done so too. We tend to want to surround ourselves with people like us, the type that we wouldn't mind having over for a barbecue. And if you happen to get that type of person, well then, that's a bonus. The key is, and the help that the counseling firm gave to me, is that in order for a group of people to work together, each must have a commitment to the common goals and the talent to get them done. Successful companies and sports teams call this teamwork. A few tips in hiring the right people for your team. Always look for talented people. Don't wait until you need someone and settle for what happens to be there at the time. Hiring is a continual process. Make your network aware that you are a happening company and are on the lookout for outstanding people. Use outside assistance whenever possible. Search out a firm that has testing and review tools and skills to assist in your search. I have used and recommend a company by the name of Hired Dimensions, located in Irving, Texas, for this service. There are others, but Paul Vishnesky is really helpful since he knows our industry. Don't hire an applicant because they are someone that you feel could be your friend. You should have already enough friends at church or the golf course in your neighborhood. Also, don't make all of your hires in the same image. Your market will dictate that you need people with varied talents to do the diverse work in the world today, to train the new people coming into the business, and to continue on when you have people leave your employment. You already have one of you in the company. Hire others with other personalities and talents. After all, you only need one starting quarterback to be successful. Be competitive with your compensation package. Our present economy makes the human resource business a buyer's market. It may be, but you still have to buy right. Makes little sense to hire someone just because they'll work cheap. It takes good pay to attract the best out there. Use this lull in the economy, and it's temporary, to build your team so that when things are better, you'll have the market edge. Establish goals and performance standards for each employee. Not only is this the fair way to manage your human resources, but it's the best way for you to see who the performers are. You shouldn't make uninformed hiring and firing decisions. These are only a few suggestions that you can use to hire the right people. The art and science of people is extensive, and not all that scientific. A closing suggestion of how to have the right talent in your business is to commit to an unending desire to improve your company by hiring the right people. Okay, we've discussed the minimization of waste and the hiring issues so far. Time to talk about you, the managers and owners of your companies that are the leaders of the entire business process. McKinsey calls this performance management, or more specifically, the art of rewarding people who attain better than standard performance. Okay, have I set you up yet? I hope you're beginning to see where I'm going here. If you're with me so far, you'll really grasp the impact of the rest of this discussion. See, what productivity is about is making more profits through understanding the intricacies and dynamics of the labor force and how, through the inspections and adjustment of your labor costs and the revenue they generate, can mean the difference between profitability and mediocrity, between average performance and stellar performance, or maybe even between staying in business and going out of business. My company has established a product that serves the air conditioning and plumbing industries called Performance Pay System. It is a complete software-based program that interfaces with our flat rate system to compensate the service technicians based not on clock hours, but on the proficiency and productivity of the technician. Whether you use Callahan Roach's system or your own, I would like to stress the issues that you as a business manager need to address, as McKinsey says. Reward people who attain better than standard performance. How do you do that? Initial reaction may be to give commissions on the increased revenues generated by the technician. Or how about spiffs and little rewards for finding new customers? A common action is to keep on giving the staff more money, regardless of their production, but rather how long they have been with you or how loyal they are to you and your company. There are pitfalls in each of these tactics. The practice of giving the technician a piece of the pie by sharing the revenues or profit has become commonplace of late. It is a knee-jerk reaction to the technicians who want to leave and start their own businesses anyway, since they just don't make enough money. If you've gone to this compensation method, you have found out a few things. One is that your technicians may now be more interested in loading up the repairs sold to the customer instead of doing a quality job. Exotic computations have been established and written about in trade publications to give increasing levels of commissions to techs based upon volume. For those who don't want to pay commissions, other little bones are thrown the technician's way and called something else. Usually the word spiff is used to pay someone a finder's fee for a lead or for a service agreement sale. The problem with both of these compensation methods is that they only work for a part of your staff. If you use them, you have found, as others have, that there are those who perform in this environment and those that do not. Maybe because of ethics, salesmanship, or desire, the success of these two systems is usually limited to those who have the personalities and eloquence to convince customers to buy something from them. And once they do, you will also find that you may make less money on them. Reason is that your prices have not gone up, but your costs have, resulting in even lower margins and a part of your staff with the feeling that they're left behind. That's why the tactic of just giving the techs more money is not sound either. Your business owners are taking the risks and are the source of capital to grow the business, and merely lowering profits to make your staff happy is not the key to increased profits and productivity. These tactics do nothing for productivity. By now you should be asking, how do I reward my staff for increased performance? The answer lies in increased output per the unit of input. I'll repeat that because it sounds simple, but is hard to comprehend because we in this industry have been addressing commissions and spiffs and overlooking a major element of the process, getting more quality work from your staff. A tech that sells more but performs poor quality work will magnify your problems. It's about the technician becoming a better craftsman. Increased output per unit of input. I mentioned this earlier. Train, train, and train some more. Hire right. Minimize waste. But now it's about compensating your staff in line with providing an environment for you, your customer, and your employee to win. How to do this? Okay, here it is. All work done by your company should be rooted in quality. Quality, of course, begins with training, but once you have the right people and continually train them, your policy should begin with a sound and thorough diagnostic. The diagnostic is the expert analysis and status that the professional technician gives to the customer before any fix is started. How can you fix something that you don't fully understand the problems and the root causes of the problem? You can't. Yet so many companies operate for years with this approach. My friend Tom Mooney has said a million times, prescription without diagnosis is malpractice. Tom is right. His medical analogy applies to you. Do you feel good if your techs come back to the office with bloated service tickets and then a week later go back to the same home because they didn't properly and professionally diagnose the true operating condition of what they were working on? So you must do a quality diagnostic. Let me give you a few tips to help you set policy with your staff to do good diagnostics. We've already talked about the training you should give your staff and hiring the right staff to do this. But once those are in motion, you should do the following. Assure that your staff has the right tools to perform their job tasks. Improper, missized, or lack of the right tools result in shoddy workmanship and costly do-overs and callbacks. Obtain and teach your staff in the proper usage of modern test equipment. I still marvel at the number of air conditioning companies that do not have airflow hoods in their business, for example. Encourage your staff to be students of their trade. Whether it be a painter who studies the latest acrylic paint composition, or the plumber who can speak about the latest low-flow water closets, you must have people in your company who care to become the best that they can be. Buy them subscriptions to the trade publications, encourage them to take continuing ed classes, conduct technical service meetings in addition to the sales and information meetings you now conduct. Establish a high level of ethics in your business. There is plenty of work for a quality and ethical company without resorting to underhanded tactics that are not only wrong, but may end up with you on 60 Minutes. Set an example through your own actions. Once the quality diagnostic is performed, establish with the customer viable repair options to assure further reliability. After all, that's what the customer is expecting. If they don't want the repair, that's fine. Do not use scare tactics to get a few dollars of more revenue. And, of course, stand behind your work. If you've heard the term prevention, not detection, you know that if you do all the things I just mentioned, the incidence of you having to go back and do the things over will be minimal. Now, how do you compensate your staff for increased productivity? Let me use our sample company to show you. First is to increase revenue through offering the customer all the things they need to bring their system up to optimal standards using expert diagnostic and repair techniques. When you do so, you generate more top-line revenue. These revenues are available to the people who do the work, not at the cost of profit, but because of increased profits. In doing so, your staff becomes more productive because they are not using valuable company resources to get from job to job. Unapplied labor goes down because the number of hours a day the customer is paying for goes up. When unapplied labor goes down, your support team can be smaller or redirected to more productive activities like marketing to other prospects. Okay, back to the arithmetic. If we increase productivity using the things we mentioned here, and please, know that these are only fabricated numbers, you'll see the ramification of our efforts. If we take our $2 million company and increase revenue because of increased productivity by 2% to $2,040,000, equally distributed between our sales and service departments, and reduce the waste which results in cost of sales to go down from 35 to 33% in service, and from 58 to 56% in installations, gross margin increases in the total company by over $50,000. Couple this with a decrease in overhead of only 2% due to proper management of the company assets and expenses, and net profit increases by 4%. In the case of the example company, net profit went from $240,000 to over $326,000. Now here's the important part. Your technicians will make more money. Yes, your techs now make more money because in a performance pay environment, they are generating extraordinary margins for you. You give them a bonus for their productivity, and you both attain your goals. Callahan Roach's system works this way. You do your service dispatch and service calls just as you do now. Your field staff does the call, files all work order and timesheet requirements, and they are eligible to make more money. How? Well, using the right people, properly trained, you have a technician now that looks to leave the office promptly, not make excessive gas-up, parts house, or coffee shop visits, and want to do more service calls in a day. The key in the Callahan Roach system is that the tech can make more hours of pay within the same time frame of work that he was once constrained to what the clock said. For example, the professional tech who conducts himself in the way I discussed previously could make 10 hours of pay in the time he formerly made in 8 hours. We're not taking away from the customer because they are still getting the work professionally completed, but now our tech's applied time increases as well. Just like the auto mechanic, the amount your tech makes now falls on their shoulders. The more productive, the more money they make. And of course, vice versa. The less productive will be weeded out. Okay, now you have seen the benefits of increased production through minimizing waste, having the right people and trained people in your employ, and an incentive system to pay them to perform. The significant issue pertaining to technical services provided to homeowners and businesses is that there is a lot of room to grow productivity points due to the high unapplied factors in this sector. As I mentioned, price increases are great, but not as flexible. I'm pleased to have you hear me talk about something that excites me about your business. I encourage you to study the numbers, those in your business that will make a profound impact in the way you make profits. But you've heard those types of claims before. In addition to the profit increases, you now have an opportunity to increase customer-employee satisfaction. What a winning combination. Good luck, and please contact me personally if you'd like to discuss this topic or any other issue regarding improving your company. Thank you.
As always, we welcome your feedback on each month's tape. Feel free to give us a call with your comments, or if you prefer, you may fax or email our office. Better yet, check out Granding Associates on the World Wide Web. Our totally redesigned website now has a complete listing of all the products and services Grandy & Associates has to offer. Our address is www.grandyassociates.com, and it's also printed on the tape insert. Again, our website address is www.grandyassociates.com. One last comment. Grandy & Associates' newest program called the Basic Business Bootcamp is taking the industry by storm. Contractors from across the country are traveling to Owensboro, Kentucky to attend Tom Grandy's bootcamp. If you're not generating the profit you deserve, I would suggest you seriously consider attending the 3-day bootcamp to learn all the basics of how to run a profitable business. To sign up for one of the monthly programs, simply give us a call at 1-800-432-7963. The Service Contractor's Business Tape of the Month is produced and distributed by Grandy & Associates. If we can be of service to you, give us a call on our toll-free line, 1-800-432-7963. Until next month, remember, invest your time and invest your money in those things that will reproduce.